Hello, and welcome to Subverse News Podcast. Today we are going to talk about a range of topics, including Facebook intends to release a brain-computer interface, Capital One compromised in data leak, North Korea launches missile amid South Korean military exercise, U.S. is allowing medicine imports from Canada, a prison riot in Brazil, an oil spill in Patagonia, broken hearts have been linked with cancer, and city planners use nature to increase mental health. But before we get into today's topics, make sure you follow us on Minds at subverse.minds.com, where you can find our articles, exclusive content, and our distributed newsroom. Also, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Medium. Links are in the podcast description. Lastly, we are currently raising capital to expand our company and bring you more of the news that you want. For more info, visit www.wefunder.com/subverse. Facebook has entered the realm of creating the next generation of brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs. The social media company announced a wearable that would allow individuals to communicate directly with smartphones using only their brain. This announcement comes only weeks after Elon Musk took the stage to reveal Neuralink, a direct invasive BCI that could potentially give users more brain bandwidth. The project, headed by Facebook Reality Labs, is currently in the midst of investigating how BCIs can detect what an individual hears and says, then decode the messages. For Facebook-funded researchers at University of California in San Francisco, the goal is to create a wearable device that knows how to decode words in the brain, which can offer privacy of text, as well as increased speed in communication. Facebook researchers touted their new brain interface, stating in their blog, "Rather than looking down at a phone screen or breaking out a laptop, we can maintain eye contact and retrieve useful information and context without ever missing a beat. It's a tantalizing vision, but one that will require an enterprising spirit, hefty amounts of determination, and an open mind." Unlike more invasive procedures, such as Elon Musk's Neuralink, which would require electrodes to be directly interfaced with neurons in the brain, Facebook researchers believe that a wearable is more viable and accessible. Facebook conducted experiments with volunteers who were asked to listen to questions and respond out loud with answers, allowing the system to decode their thoughts in real time. The participants were asked to answer basic questions, such as, "How is your room currently?" They had a set of 5 valid answers, including bright, dark, hot, cold, and fine. Researchers at Reality Labs explained their findings, stating, "After training, participants performed a task in which, during each trial, they listened to a question and responded aloud with an answer of their choice. Using only neural signals, we detect when participants are listening or speaking, and they predict the identity of each detected utterance using phone-level Viterbi decoding." The researchers outlined in their findings that recent investigations of the underlying mechanisms of speech representation have shown that acoustic and phonemic speech content can be decoded directly from neural activity in superior temporal gyrus and surrounding secondary auditory regions. Researchers hope that they can use speech content to develop algorithms that understand a basic lexicon and understand basic computer navigation functions such as back, home, select, and delete. The test was intended to see if the BCI could interpret a set of innocuous questions, and Facebook noted that they were able to decode a small set of full spoken words and phrases from brain activity in real time, a first in the field of BCI research. Facebook's current goal is to decode speech at 100 words a minute, with a 1,000-word vocabulary that the device understands at an error rate of less than 17%. Facebook has indicated that they are a long way from achieving similar results to more invasive technology, but they believe their work will help in the development of decoding algorithms that can bridge the gap for more advanced BCIs in the future.
A former Amazon Web Services employee has been charged with one count of computer fraud and abuse for hacking into the personal data of 100 million applications of the financial services firm Capital One. The suspect, 33-year-old Seattle-based software engineer Paige Thompson, broke into a Capital One server and accessed 140,000 Social Security numbers, 1 million Canadian insurance numbers, and 80,000 bank account numbers. Thompson was able to gain access through Amazon's cloud data hosting service, which Capital One was using. According to the court filing, Thompson got into the server by exploiting a misconfigured web application firewall. Capital One wrote about the extent of the data accessed, saying, the largest category of information accessed was information on consumers and small businesses as of the time they applied for one of our credit card products from 2005 through early 2019. This information included personal information Capital One routinely collects at the time it receives credit card applications, including names, addresses, zip codes, postal codes, phone numbers, email addresses, dates of birth, and self-reported income. According to Capital One, importantly, no credit card account numbers or login credentials were compromised, and over 99% of Social Security numbers were not compromised. Capital One CEO Richard Fairbank said in a statement, "While I am grateful that the perpetrator has been caught, I am deeply sorry for what has happened. I sincerely apologize for the understandable worry this incident must be causing those affected, and I am committed to making it right." Thompson was arrested on Monday, and many details are being revealed about who she is and why she is suspected of the crime. On Meetup, a website for hosting group gatherings, she organized a group called Seattle Wears Kitties, described as a group for anybody with an appreciation for distributed systems, programming, hacking, cracking. However, the group has been taken down from the site. The New York Times wrote that the FBI noticed her activity on Meetup and used it to trace her other online activities, eventually linking her to the post describing the data theft on Twitter and the Slack messaging service. Thompson went by the name Erratic online and often posted information about herself. The New York Times found that she commented often on programming chatter, fretted about her dating life, and mourned the euthanasia of her cat, Millie. Millie's death, she wrote, was one of the most painful and emotionally overwhelming experiences I've had in my life. But Ms. Thompson, who also spoke darkly about her mental health, writing on July 5th that she intended to check herself into a facility for treatment, "I have a whole list of things that will ensure my involuntary confinement from the world," she wrote, "the kind that they can't ignore or brush off into the crisis clinic. I'm never coming back." The FBI was able to link her to the crime by following the post she made online. In one case, even mentioning Capital One, saying, "I've basically strapped myself with a bomb vest," Ms. Thompson wrote in a Slack post, dropping Capital One's docs and admitting it. Thompson's hearing is on Thursday and will remain in federal custody until then. Early Wednesday morning, North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles from its eastern coast. This is the second launch following last week's, which is the first time they have tested missiles since President Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un met in June. North Korean state news said last week's tests were a solemn warning to South Korean military warmongers. The first missile was launched at 5:06 a.m. and the second at 5:27 a.m. from the Kalma area near the North's eastern port of Wonsan, according to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. Both missiles are estimated to have flown about 250 kilometers at an approximate altitude of 30 kilometers, said the JCS, adding that the South Korean and U.S. militaries are analyzing more details. The missiles fired last week flew some 600 kilometers at an altitude of around 50 kilometers and were identified as KN-23s, or the North's version of Russia's Iskander ballistic missile. KN-23 missiles are designed to evade missile defense systems by being easier to hide, launch, and maneuver in flight. South Korean and U.S. forces have a joint exercise scheduled for August, which North Korea has denounced as a violation of their arrangement Trump and Kim Jong-un agreed to at their Singapore summit last year. Their moves to introduce the ultra-modern offensive weapons into South Korea and hold military exercises in defiance of the repeated warnings from the DPRK, said the North Korean Central News Agency. South Korea's Defense Minister Jong Kyung-do said the missiles were identified as a different type from the previous models. South Korean Foreign Minister Kang Kyung-wha told reporters in Seoul, "North Korea's actions do not help ease military tensions, nor do they help keep the momentum for talks that are underway." Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe confirmed that there was no impact on Japan's security after the launch. "We will continue to closely cooperate with the United States and others," Abe told reporters. In response to questions about the status of North Korean negotiations, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told the traveling press while on his way to Bangkok for the ASEAN summit, "We think they'll be started before too long. I'm very hopeful." Chairman Kim had said when the two leaders met at the DMZ that it could get started in a few weeks. It's taken a little bit longer than that. Talking directly about the missile launch, Pompeo said, "Lots of countries posture before they come to the table." North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho canceled his planned visit to the ASEAN forum, but Pompeo said the Americans were still open to a meeting. Harry Kaizanis of Washington Center for the National Interest think tank said the latest launches were a clear attempt by North Korea to put pressure on Washington. Other analysts have said North Korea will likely press more aggressively for U.S. concessions because of Trump's apparent eagerness to uphold his engagement with Pyongyang as a foreign policy success ahead of his 2020 re-election bid.
Today, President Trump and his administration took the first step toward allowing the import of medicine from Canada. The Department of Health and Human Services claims they propose a rule, alongside the FDA, to allow authorized states and other groups to pursue and lead projects to import drugs from Canada. Their hope is to bring inexpensive prescription drugs to the American people who have been vastly overpaying for over-the-counter medication for years. According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, as of 2018, the U.S. had the highest health spending in the world, amassing $10,586 per capita. Of that, 12% of their health budget was spent on pharmaceuticals, which is a little over $1,200 per citizen out of pocket. Federal programs, like Medicaid, which covers 72 million people, cover the rest of the bill. Many Americans think Medicaid administrators should use their purchasing power to negotiate with Big Pharma to lower their prices, while others fear that this tactic could backfire, leading to low-income patients losing access for their medications. Medicaid publishes state drug utilization data on their website, showing the prescription name, a labeler code that identifies the manufacturer, labeler, and packager, and utilization information as part of the national drug code. Recently, the Trump administration failed in their efforts to reduce drug prices in the U.S., specifically losing a legal battle with drug makers to disclose the price of their medication in television ads, as well as failing to get pharmacy benefit managers to provide discounts to Medicare recipients. However, allowing international drug makers to bring cheaper drugs to sell in the U.S. would potentially allow them to sell below their contracted prices. The implementation of this is not in the near future, as there are many technical steps for rulemaking and potential challenges with proposals in Washington, including lobbying from the healthcare industry. The U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary said a few weeks ago the government was looking into ways to import cheaper prescription drugs from overseas. Currently, there are 10 states that have passed or proposed laws allowing imports of prescription drugs, but shipments need federal approval to be legal. Health Canada states their position has not changed. The ministry said officials have made Canada's position clear to both federal and state officials in the United States and stands ready to take action to ensure Canadians have uninterrupted access to prescription drugs they need.
On Monday, July 29th, news reports revealed that 57 prisoners were killed in a prison riot in the Altamira Regional Recovery Center in the northern Brazilian state of Pará. The state prison authority said the riots started directly after a fight erupted between two rival gangs within the prison. The two rival gangs involved a Rio de Janeiro-based gang known as Red Command and a local Pará criminal group known as First Command got into a confrontation at approximately 7 a.m., later escalating into a full-blown riot, with members of First Command setting fire to a pavilion where Red Command was located. State Prison Chief Jarbas Vasconcelos indicated that the attacks were entirely attributed to gang retribution, saying, "It was a targeted attack. The aim was to show that it was a setting of accounts between the two groups, not a protest or rebellion against the prison system." Of the 57 reported killed, state prison authorities say 16 of the individuals were decapitated. Video was released showing prisoners playing soccer with the severed heads of gang rivals during the aftermath of the riots. Authorities indicated that they found makeshift knives on the scene of the riots, but found no indication of firearms. After authorities regained control over the prison, they said that 46 inmates will be transferred to help mitigate the threat of further retaliatory attacks. 10 will be transferred to more secure federal facilities. In a report from the National Justice Council from July 2019, a local judge outlined the prison held 343 detainees, although the location is only intended to house a maximum of 163 inmates. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro's main campaign message when he was elected was to help curb the widespread violence in Brazil, vowing to stuff prison cells with criminals. Experts say that issues with the approach come from a lack of resources provided to the now overpopulated prison system under the Bolsonaro administration. Bruno Paes Manso, a researcher at the University of Sao Paulo's Violence Studies Center, stated in an interview with the Washington Post, "By insisting on high incarceration in the overcrowded prisons, Bolsonaro wants to increase the dose of poison that is killing us."
CAP, a Chilean holding company of mining and steel, alerted the Chilean Navy on Saturday, June 27th, around 1 p.m. local time, to an oil spill in the Patagonia area off the southern coast of Chile. According to The Guardian, the Chilean Navy confirmed 40,000 liters, or 10,600 gallons, of oil was spilled into the sea on Sunday. They deployed an anti-contamination team, as well as an ocean patrol group and barge near the island of Guareo, to CAP's onshore terminal where they mine limestone. Oceana Chile tweeted a picture of the affected area. Ronald Bosch, the commander of the 3rd Naval Zone, told local media, quote, "The Marine Pollution Control Center was activated," end quote. CAP released a statement saying the incident had been contained, adding that the spill affected a bay and they installed a container sleeve in the area on Saturday, starting to immediately remove oil from the environment. CAP suspended all operations on the island as the cleanup project takes place. The Patagonia is a remote area of Chile that spans over 1 million square miles with water that covers 1.8 million square miles. It is home to a large ecosystem of numerous species of wildlife. The oil spills threaten marine life, making a sheet of residue that covers the water, prohibiting light from entering the ecosystem, damaging the wildlife's ability to feed and reproduce in the affected area. According to the Chile Navy, as of Sunday night, quote, 15,000 liters of polluted seawater has managed to be contained on Guayao Island. Both the Elicura barge and the Marineno Buetelteilba Ocean Patrol has already been in the area supporting the emergency. Additionally, the San Andre barge and a specialist crew were hired by CAP to support cleanup and monitor the company's action plan as work takes place. The company also requested the Scientific Observatory of the Patagonia Austral Channels and Andes to monitor the process. CAP will periodically report on the progress of the contamination until the situation is back to normal. The sustainability manager at Compañía Siderúrgica Huachipato, Pablo Pacheco, explained that the spilled oil is diesel and not crude oil, and that once the event occurred in the bay of the port of Guayero, all protocols were activated for the operational incident. He states, quote, "As a company, we have made every effort to keep the situation under control and reduce the impacts, despite the complex climate conditions that prevail in the area. After the incident, the hydrocarbon extraction of the marine environment began immediately, with the tireless and committed work of around 30 people, which included the installation of a 50-meter plastic container, which prevents the advance of diesel and the use of suction motor pumps, among other actions."
A former Amazon Web Services employee has been charged with one count of computer fraud and abuse for hacking into the personal data of 100 million applications of the financial services firm Capital One. The suspect, 33-year-old Seattle-based software engineer Paige Thompson, broke into a Capital One server and accessed 140,000 Social Security numbers, 1 million Canadian insurance numbers, and 80,000 bank account numbers. Thompson was able to gain access through Amazon's cloud data hosting service, which Capital One was using. According to the court filing, Thompson got into the server by exploiting a misconfigured web application firewall. Capital One wrote about the extent of the data accessed, saying, "The largest category of information accessed was information on consumers and small businesses as of the time they applied for one of our credit card products from 2005 through early 2019. This information included personal information Capital One routinely collects at the time it receives credit card applications, including names, addresses, zip codes, postal codes, phone numbers, email addresses, dates of birth, and self-reported income. According to Capital One, importantly, no credit card account numbers or login credentials were compromised, and over 99% of Social Security numbers were not compromised. Capital One CEO Richard Fairbank said in a statement, "While I am grateful that the perpetrator has been caught, I am deeply sorry for what has happened. I sincerely apologize for the understandable worry this incident must be causing those affected, and I am committed to making it right." Thompson was arrested on Monday, and many details are being revealed about who she is and why she is suspected of the crime. On Meetup, a website for hosting group gatherings, she organized a group called Seattle Wears Kitties, described as a group for anybody with an appreciation for distributed systems, programming, hacking, cracking. However, the group has been taken down from the site. The New York Times wrote that the FBI noticed her activity on Meetup and used it to trace her other online activities, eventually linking her to the post describing the data theft on Twitter and the Slack messaging service. Thompson went by the name Erratic online and often posted information about herself. The New York Times found that she commented often on programming chatter, fretted about her dating life, and mourned the euthanasia of her cat, Millie. Millie's death, she wrote, was one of the most painful and emotionally overwhelming experiences I've had in my life. But Ms. Thompson, who also spoke darkly about her mental health, writing on July 5th that she intended to check herself into a facility for treatment, "I have a whole list of things that will ensure my involuntary confinement from the world," she wrote, "the kind that they can't ignore or brush off into the crisis clinic. I'm never coming back." The FBI was able to link her to the crime by following the post she made online, in one case even mentioning Capital One, saying, "I've basically strapped myself with a bomb vest," Ms. Thompson wrote in a Slack post, dropping Capital One's docs and admitting it. Thompson's hearing is on Thursday and will remain in federal custody until then.
On July 17th, in recent international research released by the Journal of the American Heart Association, there has been evidence that supports that 1 in 6 people with so-called broken heart syndrome had cancer. The patients were also less likely to survive for 5 years after the occurrence, the Open Access Journal indicated. While a broken heart may sound like an emotional response, directly related to the separating of an individual and a loved one, there's a direct physiological reaction that happens in the body. Broken heart syndrome also goes by the name Takotsubo syndrome and creates the condition where the main pumping chamber of the heart enlarges after emotional or physical stress. While the pains could potentially feel like a heart attack, there is no actual heart muscle damage or blockage to attribute to it. The study indicates that of the 1,604 patients with broken heart syndrome, that 267 of the patients, or 1 in 6, had malignant breast cancer, tumors affecting the gastrointestinal tract, respiratory tract, as well as internal sex organs and other areas. The physical and emotional stress was evident in the study, which indicated that of the 26 centers that there was a strong correlation between the syndrome and cancer. Dr. Christian Templin, a senior author of the study as well as a director of interventional cardiology at Andreas Grünzig Heart Catheterization Laboratories in Zurich, Switzerland, indicated, "Patients with broken heart syndrome might benefit if screened for cancer to improve their overall survival. Our study should also raise awareness among oncologists and hematologists that broken heart syndrome should be considered in patients undergoing cancer diagnosis or treatment who experience chest pains, shortness of breath, or abnormalities in their electrocardiogram. Broken heart syndrome can vary in its degrees of intensity, with the most intense love-crazed components lasting sometimes for decades. Total infatuation is known in the psychological community as limerence, which involves the incessant state of compulsory longing for another person." Dr. Albert Wakin, a leading expert on limerence and professor of psychology at Sacred Heart University, outlines that limerence, although not recognized by the Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, or DSM-5, has been found in individuals suffering from the love infatuation for close to 60 years. There are several parallels between limerence and other well-known disorders, such as obsessive-compulsive disorder, as well as substance abuse, and there are many cases where there are comorbid combinations of them. While doctors are still attempting to make the correlation more definite between cancer and broken hearts, there is still a long way to go in terms of recognizing whether or not correlation actually means causation. Thanks for listening. If you want to find more content, head over to subverse.minds.com to find articles, videos, and join our public newsroom, where you can discuss topics and ideas as well as share articles. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Medium, where we regularly post our content and receive feedback from our valued listeners, like you. Our videos and articles can now be found in podcast form on Spotify, the Apple Store, Stitcher, and Anchor. If you'd like to support our work, you can donate to our PayPal, Patreon, or Subscribestar. You can also get Subverse gear at our Teespring shop. All the links are in the description. Stay tuned for more content every weekday, and we'll see you next time.